The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here. DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 to $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINTFORWARD. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code POINTFORWARD. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restriction terms and responsible gaming resources.
Point 4 is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Point Forward. Today, we will be discussing college hoop season as it is heating up. Tournament season is unfolding. Exciting performances from players like Caitlin Clark, Juju Watkins, and Paige Buckets. There are a lot of great storylines in the world of college basketball. Earlier this week, we had the honor of sitting down with the legendary Clark Kellogg for a deep dive into the heart of college basketball. It was one of our favorite conversations on Point Forward, and we're very, very, very excited for you all to listen.
Point Forward is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout our show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
ET, you've been locked in on a tournament, man.
Yeah, it's been a great tournament so far. I've been enjoying myself thoroughly. I think it's been pretty cool to see who's actually going to, you know, win. But like this year, it's been, you know, obviously the past couple of years, a lot of parity due to, the transfer portal, you know, NIL and all those things. But I think it's made for a great tournament on both sides, and especially from the women's side. You know, obviously, yeah. I always say if Travis Scott tweets it or is aware of it, it's a big idea. It's a big deal because he don't know shit about sports. And, I don't know who let this man join that bandwagon, but the more and more I see, I'm like, oh, okay, Travis Scott, this is pretty serious. If it's higher up, got straight to him. I was like, you should tweet this. This is good for your image. Because I remember going back in the day and sitting around like 2 or 3 years ago, and he knew nothing about nothing. You know, So now when I see him advertise that, I'm like, oh, this is a big, big deal because Travis Scott literally is a band man.
No, I've just been getting a lot of folks texting me and a lot of good arguments in different group chats about, you know, someone called Caitlin Clark Steph Curry, and somebody got offended by it. But, like, that's the beauty in that conversation, and they were really locked in. And they were saying, I hope the next game is as good as this game. Like, Juju just won. And you know, Paige did what she did in the fourth quarter. Like, it's just a beautiful thing to see. And I didn't even know about this kid from Alabama. And I sent my son his little highlight reel. It's the kid from, he went to North Dakota State, correct?
Oh, you talking about Grant Nelson. Yeah, he went to North Dakota State. Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Alabama, he right?
A couple of years. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, like, just those conversations coming from the tournament, I think, are really cool experiences. So we were talking about the big being back, too. And, you know, is there something wrong with one side of the game? Should the NBA implement the big man again?
Man, I just don't know what space it's going to be at. I mean, sometimes you look at games trying to implement. You're in a flow of, like, the league where it's just so up and down.
Right.
Like, unless you got Jokic or whatever, the game has just changed tremendously, you know? And I guess apparently the best coaches are supposed to be at the college level, so I guess, you know, they have more time to really implement and kind of put systems in and really, quote-unquote, they practice. There's no time to practice once you hit full flow.
That's a bar.
I just don't think there's any chance of them. Once somebody does it one time, right, everybody else follows, correct? So maybe yes. In the league, it'll be the copycat league. I think one thing I noticed about the tournament that I wanted to say, obviously with much more exposure, especially from the women's side, you know, it's going to be much more, you know, words and talks on it. And I think you're seeing certain people struggling with, you know, some of the negativity from the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, when we're setting things forward and has nothing to do with gender or anything, it's just like, no, when you pop in, it's going to bring in a lot of skeptics and criticisms and, you know, good, bad, and indifferent. And I think one thing that, you know, not only noticed from the tournament that I love about it is all the coverage that the females are getting. And then at the same time, you know, just, you know, covering, you know, transitioning to that coverage and being like, hey, this is not just so much, I think, student athletes that go too hard on them, but just even, you know, all levels of sports with attention, you're just not able to control it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the good, bad, indifferent. I just think, you know, like what Mark Jackson quoted, you know, Maurice Claret, he says, let's stop paying attention or trying to get back on the people that have been negative to us, and let's start, you know, showing love and giving get back to the people that have been positive to us.
True story.
I think this whole thing has been positive, and I just want, you know, to continue to headline all the emails have been doing their thing, all the players have been doing their thing. But also just accept the new level. Like, this is the big leagues now, baby. Like, Angel Reese, all these people, Caitlin Clark, you are, like, household names synonymous with everything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, sometimes half the part of it is people throw shade to get by because that's what they can do in sports. They get away from their life and throw shade. It's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just part of the game. And, you know, I think the one thing that occurred when you look at Angel Reese saying, like, yo, I haven't had fun since I won a chip. And it's like, nah, you should. Before you even hit the leaves and you're in the time of your life, like, get that message out to be like, man, stick your middle finger up and love every single moment of it.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, they're going to have something to say regardless. And you might as well rock out and rock out.
Well, I saw she had 20 rebounds.
Yeah, she was going to work, bro.
Right? And she's probably faced probably more criticism than any collegiate athlete that I've seen in a long time. You know, I remember, you know, the hate J.J. Redick got. You got a few guys that, you know, get their hate. But she gets a lot of shade thrown at her. I think she's done a good job of responding to it all. You know, I saw her on the front of Women's Health magazine when I'm going through the airports. Yeah. You know, just, you know, I'm thinking that's like, this is super dope. Like, she's doing what she's supposed to do. You know, if she was any other shade, I think she would be applauded for how she's making the most of herself and her time while she's in college. You know, regardless of what anyone may feel about how she's going about it, but I think she's showing up on the court as well. I've seen many collegiate athletes' NIL deals be based up off their look and not their performances on the field or on the court.
Yeah.
And so for her to continue to have the success that her and the team's been having on the court, I think it's a beautiful thing. And then what Shaq is doing down there supporting them as well is really beautiful.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey there, it's Matt Norlander with the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. And yes, we are in the thick of the college hoop season. Our pod runs at least 3 times a week and covers everything you need to know, from the power conference team to the mid-majors, the scoops, the stories, game predictions, previews, huge recaps, everything. We cover it all. To find us, search Eye on College Basketball podcast wherever you get your pods. Forward. Point. Forward.
I was, you know, also from the time that's pretty lit is it's the first time in history where two programs have both the men's and women's team in the Final Four. So you're looking at NC State, which is huge because, you know, their last toast to the town with Julius Hodge and still hold on to Phillip Rivers. And Archie Miller, yo short ass. Shout out to Archie Miller. And then, you know, I just thought that was dope, man. I think that's super cool. When you're in college, you're so close to the women's team and stuff like that. I think it's a dope memory for, you know, both teams to really set out and go out there, really come back with a Final Four and be able to hang a banner, you know, that fan base and everything. It's been a dope march.
No, I saw one of the ladies from the NC State team speaking about the men's and how, you know, for a school like that, you know, this is very rare. You know, UConn, you know, that's happened a few times for both of them. Usually when the men make it, the women make it, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got something in the water in stores. They just getting it right.
Yeah, for sure. Especially, you know, considering, like, the women's team made it, and they're the fifth seed, and they were kind of down. You know, they're still missing AZ Fudd.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, Paige is still killing, she's still getting her body right and everything. But, you know, that game versus Juju and USC was something crazy. Yeah. I thought that was a hell of a game. I wish, like Dane tweeted, man, Juju was mellow at Syracuse. Give her the ball more. You know what I mean? I just wish down the stretch she was shot like the last 4 or 5 shots.
Is she like mellow, though?
I think, to be honest with you, I think she's Kobe.
That's what, man, the way she gets to that mid-range, I'm like, yeah. this is what the NBA missing.
Yeah, and being honest with you, I think she Kobe, and it's crazy. And some of her attack moves are like on some D-Book shit. So you take it from what you want.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm talking about like even a move where she kicked it off her foot, like her foot and lost it. I'm like, bro, you better be lucky. She is in a break. Her movement is crazy. You know what I mean? Like a big fan of like movement and effortless. And it's just like, nah, bro, her movement, really, she's jabbing, no dribble and pulling. Like, she's doing some stuff a lot of men can't do. Women, anybody can do, bro. And she, the year she had was unbelievable. I'm a big fan of hers. I think one thing that I saw was it was referring to, like, the top five. I think it was from Caitlin Clark's and Paige's class. And it was something in regards to, what was it?
The top five. I saw that.
Yeah, from the 2020 class coming out of high school
with Paige one.
Yeah, Angel Reese,
Angel,
Cameron Brink, Caitlin Clark, and Camilla Cardosa.
From
and
South Carolina.
Yeah, and they, I mean, that's a hell of a return on investment.
That was dope. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was beautiful to see. And when we're sitting down looking now, it's like, I believe the league is in good hands.
Yeah.
And like, the same thing that those girls are upset about, it's like, no, like, they don't be talking about you like for forever. The speeds of where we're going is super lit. And then
it's like the class, it's like an 84 class.
Yeah.
It's like an 84 class.
And then when Clark Kellogg was talking about the 1979 class.
Yeah. Whoa, that was crazy.
Byron Scott. Yeah. We have Clark on the show later. And I'm like,
Isaiah.
And bro, Clark Kellogg was, when I tell you as a kid, was
Cliff Livingston.
Yeah, bro.
He was the man in high school. People don't understand. Like, that was a crazy class.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas, bro.
Yeah. Right.
Point forward. Point forward.
And I was talking to Dave Lighty because he played with a young kid that's supposed to be projected top five. And I was like, man, I watched him play. I'm like, yo, you're young and it's in, you know, lead two or three. You're not leaving Tony Parker team to try to get like a higher draft. And I'm like, kind of looked like it worked out. And he was like, you know, my man Dave ain't really, like, a hater. Like, right. I'll say whatever. Like, he just like, yeah. No, like, bro, you don't think he's good? He's like, bro, I've been around. And this is also, too, like, we can take it into consideration. I've been around top five talent. Like you said, I came to Ohio State. I watched Greg. I watched Mike Conley. Daquan Cook. You know what I mean? Like, Costa Kufis came in. B.J. Mullins. Like, I saw you transform into a top five pick.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's sitting there having a conversation, he's like, I'm not knocking it, but to really say, like, for this dude to be the number one or number two pick dog is like, or whoever it is, just like, bro, that top five talent don't look like what it used to look like. And for somebody that didn't get drafted, he's like, well, shit, I could have went top five. He's not one of them people that ever said it.
Right.
But he's like, come on, man. Like, he's like, it's just, and not in a weird way, so it just comes off as crazy what I know about basketball and what a top five used to be. Compared to like now, it's like shit. Somebody's gonna get a free 15 M's.
Well,
and I'm waiting for that number two pick to be terrible so I can get that monkey off my back. You know what I mean?
Listen, man, I haven't been around too many people who have been revered in Boston the way that you are when I'm in Boston. So what do it's you not- be talking about, my guy?
Nah, bro.
What do it you be talking about?
No, it ain't hooping, man. They remember my energy, dog. Now, I'm just joking. I am joking. You guys also think, Dre, I'm supposed to be 28 and May with 8 chips. I'm not even supposed to know you like that. You know what I'm saying? So then when we go back.
8 chips is like, aggressive.
Eight Chips is very aggressive, but I was delusional.
Darko Milicic?
Shout out to my man with the bad hands. Pause.
You better leave that man alone, who I'm thinking.
You talking about 7'4", dude?
Who are you talking about?
Danger. What's his name? The African dude.
Oh, UConn. Okay, okay. To beat.
First off, bro, I'm not saying nothing about Michael Beasley.
No, Michael Beasley was cold.
Cold, bro. I tell people that all the time. My brother, the hardest player to guard, pause, Michael Beasley.
Michael Beasley might have been, he was number two. Him, it was Melo, then Michael Beasley.
Hell yeah, Melo. Damn, Melo or Mike Beasley.
Hell yeah.
Point. Forward.
The DraftKings odds for the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship this year. UConn is the favorite, and Clark Kellogg speaks to that and why he's a fan of UConn. They're at a minus 195. Purdue has the second best odds at a plus 205. North Carolina State and Alabama have the same odds at a plus 1600. It goes further. Y'all be careful out there gambling. The national championship for the men's, the game exact result odds. UConn to beat Purdue at a minus 115. Purdue to beat UConn at a plus 320. UConn to beat North Carolina State at a plus 450. Purdue to beat Alabama at a plus 950. Alabama to beat Purdue at a plus 2000. North Carolina State to beat UConn at a plus 2200. Alabama to beat North Carolina State plus 3500. And North Carolina State to beat Alabama at a plus 6000. AKA nobody will be watching that game. And on the women's side, it's a little exciting. The women's championship game odds is South Carolina winning it all at a minus 195. They are the favorites. They are still undefeated on the season. Iowa and Caitlin Clark at a plus 300. We've been talking about Caitlin Clark for quite some time. Like, we were early believers. UConn at a plus 600. I just ran into Tina Charles today, too. She's working out in the gym.
She always working out at the gym.
Great energy. And North Carolina State has the fourth best odds at plus 1600. And the Caitlin Clark odds.
What is? There's a Caitlin Clark.
Over under on her points versus UConn in the Final Four. And she's at 33.5 points.
I'm glad that's at that level. Not
I thought so they. They're getting rid of prop bets. I'm sorry, they're getting rid of bets in college, which is good.
Yeah, you saw that with the NCAA commissioner president said. It's like betting for people to get rid of prop bets because it takes out the integrity of the game. Now you got people, you know, looking to see like, yo, I need to make three threes or four. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, Charlie Baker.
I think, and that's to start that is the beginning of a finesse fest. But my only thing of. For certain people, when everybody trying to bet the over, under, or make points, it's like last night, Caitlin shot 23, dog.
Yeah. She was 9 for 20, though, right?
Yeah, but regardless, even if she shot like 36%, like then, and all that other stuff, you're still going to damn near get the 30. She shot 20 times. What about
average? Oh, she got the Pistol Pete average, 27 attempts and 17 free throws a game. And they say an amazing feat that he averaged 44.
Yeah, but no shade thrown towards her because she took out LSU and
oh no, we've been singing her praises since before the wave came about.
And shout out to the young ladies on her team. I just like damn, like she leave with 45, everybody leave with 6. It's like where'd you get your 12 assists? You know what I mean? Like I'm saying to be able to get her 12 assists is legit. I just be like damn, like she beat them with them. That's crazy.
I think she got a couple hoopers out there. She got a couple hoopers out there.
Yeah, but they lead a game of 6.
they playing defense.
No, those little Gabby Marshall doing her thing. It is real. And those are that is a tough girl. So they do go to it. So I'm not mad at it. I'm not gonna lie to you. Let's stop. Let's keep it clean. The dirty man is back, man. Paige Bucket, she forget all the other stuff. Queen, climb back to your throne. We are waiting. It's on a big stage. You heard what OG Geno said. We got the best player in the country. This is on some Batman Dark Knight stuff, bro. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? Like, bro, she has a torn ACL, torn Achilles. Her right hand went out with another ACL, easy foot or her 8th ACL injury.
Yeah.
They still make it to the tournament. She's playing 40, G. And then when you watch, I see you play. It's literally like, You're like, oh, no, I see what they're talking about, bro. Yeah. Like, she literally, she reminds me of when they're like, "Is how good is she?" It's like, it's either she has a great game or a really good game. There's no bad. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously, Caitlin Clark and Killen from day one, but I always kind of try to compare, like, the RPI. See, like, what, uh-huh. You know what I mean? Is Steph's 2 years or 3 years of 30 better than Bryce for 16, 28, and 8? You know what I mean? And it's like, what makes you dominant? The firepower jumping up or like being consistently consistent? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's, I mean, if it is too deep of a conversation, I always wonder about that comparison.
No, I mean, you said it about KD last week. You said, man, these dudes is, what'd you say about KD? He's just like, this dude is just, he's just averaging 28 for 18 years.
Yeah, and you just be like, dude, he went through all them problems. Ain't nothing at Kurt. Like, it's really crazy, bro. Yeah. It's crazy. Not to bring up RIP to Kobe, bro, but money. That rape case, Kobe, was crazy. We can switch. So, up in the chair. I'm just saying, for that boy, yeah, bro, the child support case me up. You know what I'm saying? And like, I wasn't like in any position. You know what I'm saying? Kobe left that bad boy facing 15 years. In the early thousands, Colorado, dropping 40.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely wild.
For sure. The DraftKings bracket check. We had 63,415 entries. So shout out to all of y'all that fell out of support. Either y'all got problems gambling or y'all just showing mad love. Either way, yeah, we got love back. So shout out to the four users tied in first place. That's BJKA, Comiskey 11, Scardy with an I, and Wes Cuddy. And they all have different teams winning the finals, which is super, 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 super cool because only one of them can win. And the prize for each one of them are $525. They all have 1,010 points. And so only one of y'all going to win. Appreciate y'all tapping in with us.
Point. Forward.
The thrilling excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINTFORWARD. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code POINTFORWARD. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet on an amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources.
Well, coming to the show today, we have a very special guest. He needs no introduction if you're a fan of the Final Four. Even if you play 2K, you know, you definitely hear this voice. You recognize the face. He's a fellow The Ohio State University Buckeye. One of the best players to ever come out of school, but also one of the greatest individuals I've been able, to ever be around. Always a big smile and a great person to really get advice from. So welcome to the show, the Honorable Clark Kellogg.
Appreciate it, E.T. Andre, great to be with you guys on this edition of Point Forward. So glad to hang out with you guys for a little bit.
And we got history, because E.T. was the MVP of your basketball camp when he was 12 years old. That's a crazy fact.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, man, that's full circle. You know how the fraternity of hoops is, and you never know when you're doing it at the level that I got a chance to do it at. You guys obviously have done it at the highest level too, but one of the things you tend to try to do when you're in that position is to connect to those that are going to follow you, and you do it through a community service, you do it through basketball camps, you do it through school appearances. I mean, you just reach back to try to touch those that are coming behind you and hopefully be able to have a positive impact and influence on them. So it's always rewarding whenever I've had a chance to see guys like E.T. or other young folks that have spent time either at a camp or been at a school that I spoke at and say something I said may have impacted them, something I did or my example. And that's what we call paying it forward and keeping the circle going. And grateful to have a chance to do that. And really proud of ET and how he's moved forward in his journey from Ohio State, All-American, having his number retired at Ohio State, to a really good pro career, and now transitioning to life beyond the court.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And most folks know you for your voice, and we were just doing a series that we do on our travels. And a part of one of the stories that ET was able to tell from his perspective is I was noticed not as a basketball player by someone, but as an investor. And he was saying that that was something that was just different. Like, that was the first time I've ever experienced that. Like, hey, you're the investor. My company is pitching yours. Had no idea that I played basketball. And so for you, most folks, you know, they recognize the voice, you know, the presence of, like we're saying, we're in March Madness right now. But you're one of just only a handful of rookies in NBA history to average 20 and 10. You know, tell us about your experiences, you know, before, you know, folks, from what folks know you as right now to, you know, your time at Ohio State, being one of the best basketball players, to what you did in the league that, you know, we don't see very often.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, Andre. I mean, it's been so long ago since I played. I was drafted back in 82, was the eighth player pick. Obviously spent 3 years at Ohio State, grew up in Cleveland, and was a highly recruited high school player coming out of Cleveland in high school. Our class in 1979 was maybe, according to many, the best class ever. I mean, it had James Worthy and Dominique Wilkins and Ralph Sampson and Terry Cummings and John Paxson and Steve Stepanovich and Antoine Carr and Cliff Levingston. I mean, Isaiah Thomas. It was a loaded high school class. And I've always, Byron Scott was part of our class, wow. Sidney Lowe, Thurl Bailey, Dale Ellis. I mean, our class was rich and deep. And I was considered at that time, coming out in 79, one of the top two or three players in that class. And so went on from that to having a chance to play at Ohio State. And then in the NBA, my rookie year, did the 2010 thing. And didn't realize how significant it was until a lot of time passed. I think there's been, I don't know what the numbers are now, there's probably been 20, 25, 30 guys in the history of the league that have done that in their first season and then had a promising career cut short. But you're right, there's a whole generation of folks, multi-generations of folks that know me more from my work with CBS, prior to that with ESPN, and then obviously there's a full generation of young folks that know my voice from the NBA 2K franchise, which I've been part of as a commentator since 2009, so 15 years of doing that. But life is a transition and transformation, right? We're always seeking to move forward and hopefully make ourselves more than what we are currently. And basketball was the platform for all of that for me. I mean, I love the game. Grabbed me when I was 9, 10 years old, man. Grabbed me. Much like it grabs most of us to get to this level. It gets a hold of you, and then you grab it back. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, it's a love affair. It's work. It's achievement. It's moving forward. It's dreaming of being a pro. And then having a chance to do that, now you're trying to get to that next level. Can I be part of a winning team? Can I be an all-star? Can I leave a mark on the court? But you know, at some point it's going to end, right? Yeah. At some point, that's guaranteed for all of us. Nobody is going to play forever. Yeah. There's some guys who are going to play a long time. Some guys like me play 3.5 years, 5 years on the books, 3.5 years of games, and then it's over. But I loved the game. Loved it from the time I was 9 years old, man. And I'm thankful that I had a chance to realize the dream of being a pro. Wish it could have lasted longer. But when it didn't, so many of the lessons I learned from playing, I sought to apply in this next chapter of my life as a broadcaster and serving on public company boards and being involved in community service and those kind of things to try to make a difference. But basketball was kind of the launching pad and the foundational pillar piece for a platform of being able to have some success and leverage that going forward.
Yeah, well, you say that now, but when it came down to, we all have that crazy love affair with basketball, or even, you know, wanting to be the best basketball player, you know, ever, your career was cut short. How were you able to transition, and what was your mindset into going straight into broadcasting? Because back in the day, I feel like that I was pretty young, but that outlet wasn't too, you know, frequent, especially for guys whose career ended early that didn't have, like, you know, Magic Johnson was taking a spot at one point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah, no, that's a good point, E.T. You know, when I got drafted, I was 21. You know, I had left school a year early, and then my career was over at 26. In August of 87, I had retired. It was over. That part of it was over. The playing part of it was over. But I was always serious about my education. I was always serious about trying to heed good advice from people that came across my path. I had mentors, coaches, family members that really kind of drove home the point for me that at some point, basketball playing is going to be over. It's great that you have a chance to do it. It's great that you've been able to do it well and realize your dream. But at some point, it's going to be over. And who are you outside of basketball? And so when I had to retire at 26, I was more interested in doing kind of what Andre has done and what you have done in terms of building business outside of the game. Mm-hmm. My hope was to play 8, 10, 12 years and be building some type of entrepreneurial pursuit during my playing days and then transition to that when it was over. Well, that didn't happen. And so I still wanted to be around the game. It really was what I knew best. Having played in high school and college and the short time in the pros, I had gotten an advanced degree in basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understood and knew the game. And the Pacers asked me if I want to stay involved in their organization. And part of that was because of how I tried to carry myself as a player. Excel on the court, but also be connected and engaged in the community. Be part of the city you're playing in. Do things that would build equity in your personal brand while helping other people. And when you do that, it usually comes back to you in different ways for good. And so I had an opportunity to be asked, how might you stay involved with our organization? Community relations, do you want to be groomed to be in the front office? Those were things that Donnie Walsh, who was the president of the team at the time and general manager, offered to me as I had to retire at such an early age. And ultimately, I landed in the broadcasting space on radio because we were hiring a guy, Mike Inglis, who went on to do Miami Heat games for years as their primary play-by-play guy. But he was a brand new NBA announcer back in 1987, coming in from Canada, coming down from Canada.
I know he was Canadian.
Pacers felt I could help him learn the NBA by being his partner on radio. And that was the beginning of my broadcasting journey. I always was a student of the game. I read about it, watched it, always took seriously communicating with the press. I was a guy that really was forced and pushed to be an effective communicator by my late mom. Mm-hmm. He said, boy, if you're going to be this basketball star you think you're going to be, you better not ever embarrass me when they interview you. And I took that to heart, fellas, from the time I started being interviewed in high school and then college. I was always thinking about, is my mom going to be okay with how I'm answering questions, with how I'm carrying myself? And that carried on into the broadcasting. And then I went at it just like we do as players, right? You want to be good. You put the work in. You get counseling and advice from people that are doing it. And I was able to just kind of gradually chip away from radio on the Pacers side to some regional local college games to the ESPN, then ultimately to CBS, where I've been since 1997 full time.
So who are some of the folks that you looked up to, you know, as you transition into this, you know, broadcasting space? Because, you know, you're speaking to it. You're showing us the blueprint as well, because your blueprint you're speaking to is timeless. You know, when I talk to a lot of the young players, it's like, listen, fellas, you got to pay it forward. You know, pay respect to the guys that, you know, kind of paved the way for us. But you also got to get ready for the next crop. Like, you got to be able to pass it to them and put them in a position where they can succeed just like you did. And so it's all, and it all comes to fruition. It all comes back to you. And you study a lot. You know, you talked about the game. So when you get into broadcasting, are there some folks that you're looking to, you know, get some pointers from or to model yourself as? Or was it just something that was really natural to you that helped you succeed in the manner that you have?
You know, Andre, it was a combination of all of the above. Obviously, I was blessed to have the parents I did. My dad was a police officer in Cleveland for over 40 years. My mom pretty much stayed at home. I'm the oldest of five, and I had all my grandparents in the same city, extended family. So I had a nice nuclear network. And then from that, I got good, solid foundation and work ethic and the right attitude and approach. And then I had a couple of key folks in terms of coaches and teachers, and then a mentor of mine who actually was a very successful businessman in the insurance business and an Ohio State grad, befriended me when I was in high school. His name is Ira Novak. He's in his early 80s now. We're still good friends, but he exposed me to what business could possibly look like for somebody that applied himself, took advantage of the platform and the network of Ohio State University once I went there. And just continued to teach me a little bit about the world of business. He was a successful insurance agent. And then I had the primary broadcasting mentors and helpers for me. I always enjoyed guys that did the game well. Doug Collins was really good. Mm-hmm. Hubie Brown. Mm-hmm. I would listen to mm-hmm. all of them, the late Steve Jones. Mm-hmm. There were whoever was talking about the game on television, I typically paid attention to, even when I was a player. I would pay attention to those guys, and there were certain guys I enjoyed and their styles. But when I got started in it, I really tried to pick the brains of my broadcast partners, my play-by-play partners that had been in the game a long time and had various partners, and ask them, what makes somebody good in my seat? And a couple of things early on that stuck with me and really resonated was, one, you have to be yourself. You can't try to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. So that made a lot of sense. I've got to be me. And then you've got to be committed to the work of becoming a good analyst, which means studying the game, but studying the mechanics of being a good analyst. How to have a conversation with your partner while you're doing the game, mm-hmm. not overwhelming the game, making points that aren't obvious. So I got a lot of good pointers from several of my early broadcast partners and my producers, those that you don't see that are in the truck, basically being the CEO of the telecast. They're calling most of the shots in terms of storylines. They're helping the director determine what pictures we're going to see, but the producer is kind of overseeing the whole team, the play-by-play person, the analyst, if there's a sideline reporter. The director is controlling the camera angles, the visuals you see. There's graphic operators putting up information that you see in graphic form. But the producers are the ones who are kind of overseeing the show. And I would always ask them, what do the good people in this spot do? And they work hard, they study the game, and they have their own unique style that fits their personality. And so that's what I was told early on, and then I started to try to craft that. I've never coached, so I don't try to coach. Mm-hmm. I'm a former player that's in an analyst role who understands elements of coaching, but I can't speak to coaching like Jay Wright can speak to coaching or Bruce Pearl can mm-hmm. speak to coaching because they're in that arena and they've done it. But I can speak to what it feels like to be a player. And then I've always loved words and reading, so I try to use creative, different words to describe the basic sameness of the game. Mm-hmm. The game is two rings, a ball, and 10 people. No matter how you look at it, that's the game. It's a 94-by-50-foot box, and there's things that happen over and over in the game. How can I be creative within my style to help people understand the game in a better way, particularly people who may not know it like you and ET know it.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that I try to pattern my style after. And then the other thing I'll say, and then I'll close, is that you're part of a team when you're broadcasting, much like you are in most anything you do in life, whether it's a family, whether it's a basketball team, whether it's business partners in the best, how can I be a really good teammate? Be prepared, understand your job, do it at a high level so that you can complement the other folks that are doing their job. So those are the pillars that I've fought to, you know, build my career on, and stay fresh, stay committed to the work, and continue to try to get better each year, to try to make subtle, small improvements each year, and to never take it for granted.
Well, each year you've been for the past few decades, you've been watching college basketball at the highest level. And, you know, right now we're in an NCAA tournament and you're seeing the evolution of it. What can you tell people and teach them in regards to the parity that's been occurring this year and the past few years, and what they should expect moving forward with the game? Because it's no longer about the big-time blue bloods. You know what I'm saying? Right now, NC State has 14 losses and they're in the Final Four.
Right.
That's crazy. No, so, like,
it is.
What do you think? It's one thing about anything can happen in March, and now it's like super anything can happen in March.
Yeah. And it's been that way for, like you said, Evan, decades. And it's kind of gradually built. There have been ebbs and flows. I think there are more good players around now because of what they get to see on television, mm-hmm. what they get to do in their training. So I think more good players exist, and more good players recognize that they can realize their dreams without having to be at Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky or Kansas or any of the blue blood. Those are the primary blue bloods. UConn obviously is in that conversation now the last 25 years, but you can get to a place that's not maybe of that ilk and still have a chance to have a phenomenal college career and experience and maybe even play at the highest level. But I think there are more good players. Kids are able to see more of what they aspire to be because of television and social media. I think that helps training, improvements in that. And then the fact that we've got significant changes going on in the landscape of college basketball, mm-hmm. the transfer portal, and NIL.
Yeah.
Those things are impacting where kids can land in a situation that gives them a chance to be there, realize their dreams in places that, you know, may not necessarily be always in a power conference or one of the bigger name schools. And so I think that's part of it in terms of the parity. More kids. And then the other thing is guys are older now across college basketball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mid-major guys that maybe didn't get highly recruited are now, after 3-4 years in college, are transferring and becoming part of championship caliber teams or really good teams at NC State and other places of that caliber. So I think the game is in good shape. We got some stuff we need to work on outside of the game. Between the lines, because players are a little older, I think there are more good players that are spread out. Mm-hmm. That's part of what's contributed to the the parity that we've seen for the last 15, 20 years, really.
Well, I want to touch on that just for a quick second, because I get asked about the portal a lot. And am I a fan of the portal or not? And we've been fighting for college athletes to be properly compensated for the value that they bring to the NCAA. We've been saying it for a while. Like, how much money would you have? Based on, right?
I would have me a couple of dollars, Clark. I would have me something, man.
Right?
Well, neither one of you guys did too bad.
Right.
The way it was set up, but I hear you.
So
go ahead, finish your point.
But at the same time, there are unintended consequences. That's a phrase I've been hearing, you know, sitting in my seat for the last couple months, right? And so I'm the issue I have with the portal is it takes away the essence of amateurism, where there's accountability. You have to be able to deal with adversity. You can't quit, and you have to have the ability to be coached. And so all those things are about team building and sacrifice, and all those things are part of the fabric where what college is intended to help build us all.
Yeah.
Whether you're the student or you're the student athlete. That's what college is about. And I feel like the portal takes that away.
Yeah, it's like the kid from Alabama, Estrada. He's at his fourth school in four years, dog.
And that's the flaw right there, because he got all the game in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so I just want to know, you know, your thoughts on Because I do think there is a way to compensate the kids. Because I always say, you take care of them at the proper time. And so there's no way a 19-year-old, 18-year-old should be making $1.5 million. He has no idea what a dollar even means or the value of it. And so, yes, put it in place to where the value that he brings to society or this capitalistic system that we live in, he's compensated. But he's receiving it in a time where it's like he understands what it is. And so, okay, you give him priorities. You graduate from college, you get all the money. You go pro. You go pro, you get drafted, you sign your contract, you get your money. You know, or if you, you know, just certain things you have to pass financial literacy courses while you're in school that lets me know that you're set up for success with this money. And I think that's I hope we can all come to the conclusion, like, we got to start, because that's another duty of ours to take care of our athletes. And also, this is what I wanted to ask you. It's prolonging the inevitable of you're not good enough to go pro. So please stop switching schools.
That's the only thing. That's the only thing I don't like. Like, it's just bums leaving schools. Like, you ain't gonna play there neither. Like, so, like, the fact you trying to make it is only 60 spots. That's 1,000 something kids in the portal.
And we got kids that are seniors in high school that aren't getting recruited because they've just been cut out of the process.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, as coaches, and sometimes you're talking about like unforeseen circumstances. It's like you look at people and just be like, yo, gambling's legal. And no, they literally just made it legal in like the span of a month. And it's like, there's no way people drawing up the stipulations and guidelines to do so. And sometimes it's like what I told you before, like, bro, I can see if it's a mistake, but people are too smart to let that shit happen.
Right.
The same thing with you know, the NCAA tournament, NCAA. We were complaining about the NCAA having free workers. And we skip over that to the point of just being like, yeah, they can get paid, but not from us. And now we're at the point now we're discussing, and what I'm not knocking is like, maybe wait for these kids to get the, you know, financial literacy like courses they need to take. But I wouldn't try, when you win the lottery, they tell you get all your bread. Like, you know what I mean? And like, when you win the lottery, they say go get all your money.
That's a bar.
It's the truth. And when we sit there, it's like, damn if you do, damn if you don't. I just think as individuals, there's the true travesty is somebody having too much money, but the crazier travesty is having 28-8-8 on national TV, and I'm calling my mom who's about to like take the bus home in the hood, and her phone is off.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah,
there's tons. You understand what I'm saying? And it's like, yo, to focus on that and like to do what, like the dice roll of gambling and betting on yourself for 2 or 3 more years over something as little. It's just like, nah, bro, we gotta keep the lights on, like the Euros can make money at 15. You know what I'm saying? And that's just like, Clark stopped playing at 26. Like, back in high school, if he had NIL, the most money he probably would have made was from age 16 to 21, correct?
Yeah, you guys raised some really, really valid and good points around this whole NIL transfer portal component. We've got a ton of work to do to try to get it right in remaking the model. NIL long overdue and is exactly what should be happening. Anybody that earns a college scholarship through athletics should not be penalized for earning that scholarship. And that's basically what was happening when we did not have NIL.
Yeah.
If you earned a college athletic scholarship, then you couldn't leverage your name, image, and likeness like any other student could if they were so able to do so. So that barrier has been removed. It was never intended to be part of recruiting. It was never to be an inducement to come to a school. NIL was meant for you, Andre Iguodala at Arizona, or Evan Turner at Ohio State. Yeah. Once you were there, if there were opportunities for you to capitalize financially on your name, image, and likeness, with the help of the institution, with the help of the business community where you're in school, with the help of whoever wanted to support you in that endeavor, there shouldn't have been any reason that you couldn't do that.
Right.
Being on scholarship should not have prevented you from doing that. That's been removed,
rightly
so. I'm with you guys around the transfer portal, and this is more an indictment on our culture than it is on sports. This instant gratification that's, if it's a little hard here, let's bounce somewhere else where we think it might be easier. No real accountability. What about the value of an education? I understand that college is not for everybody, but I also know and understand that most people whose lives have been transformed and changed for the better has included education. And if you can get your education through athletic ability, you should not shortchange that. And I mean education, not just a degree, but the education of networking, leveraging influence, managing and doing life well. That's what education is too. And that can happen in the environment of the college space for those who are committed to being there and those who are committed to doing it. And I still think we can take care of them financially in a fair manner. And I want to see us tie it to some level, to your point, Andre, to some level of accountability and sticking, staying the course. Because the money that's talked about for some of these kids, it's not real. Some of this stuff is so fabricated. Nobody's throwing millions. Now, for the handful that are getting it, it's accurate. But most of these kids are not getting life-changing money.
And a lot of kids,
it's transactional. It's not transformational. This is a transaction. You don't want to. You want to be transformed through your mind and your heart, and money is part of that, but it's not the be-all, end-all. So this money that's floating around for the people that are getting it at the college level is not going to change their lives. It might help their lives, but most cases, it will not change their lives in a significant way. It can give them a leg up and a really good start, but you need to combine education with it. To your point, a bag of money without education is a bag of money that won't lead to anything other than what it can buy for the immediate time. It won't lead to anything that's lasting. It won't lead necessarily to an investment portfolio that might actually pay you in time. It won't lead to that unless you attach education and age-appropriate education. Age-appropriate. So I want to see NIL be the educational, economic, experiential engine that it can be for the good of the student athletes and their lives. That's what I want to see it be. And the way it's gone about, the way we're going about it now, tied to recruiting, kids are showing up in their families. What's the NIL package? Not am I going to play, or what role am I going to have on the team, or what will this degree mean for me, but what's in the NIL bag? And what if it's $50,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 with no education, no accountability, no expectations, just a bag of money? And it may help solve some small issues for your family, but it's bigger than that. It should be more and bigger. And I think we can do it that way if we can get it structured the right way.
And I think one thing that comes with that conversation, not so much of just learning, but like when you see your mentors coming with their hand out, that's a big deal at 18. And I'm not saying anything statistical, but it was a big deal at 18 and what you're able, it sets the tone to expect. We got kids on the Ohio State basketball team that's like, yo, you barely made honorable mention, and they're about to ask for $500,000 next year.
It's insane right now, but I'm not giving up on the fact. I think ultimately we're going to have a system. We're going to need a system where I would love to see the institutions be in charge of NIL. What the pool is going to be, what educational ties are going to be, so they can manage it. And then they can help their student athletes navigate it. And then hold them accountable to doing it. Just like you have to be held accountable making sure your kids get a meaningful degree. If you're not if you're just moving them through to be eligible and you're not helping them develop on the court, off the court, on the field, off the field, eventually that's going to show up and should damage you in terms of your reputation. The same thing should be done for NIL. If you're going to control NIL, you need to make sure that it's done right for the benefit of student athletes with education tied to it. And then you figure out what the tiers of it are for certain levels of performance. Yeah. I think we'll have to get to that at some point. And then once that's set up, and then there's got to be more transparency. Yeah. All of this backroom secrecy, yeah. Nobody knows who's getting what. Yeah. Nobody's being held accountable across the board. So it's crazy. And you don't really know what's fact and what's fiction. Yeah. And then you start out, you can't operate with any kind of continuity and reliability for the long sustainability in that kind of environment when everything is all over the place. Yeah.
But when, so with that, say if that in a perfect world, all that does come together, do you think there's an outlet anywhere for when the pro leagues meet with the student athletes, and we preach on this a lot, group economics? And is there a way, like, you're seeing the value of athletes pick up bit by bit in the pro sports now in certain areas, the college, like, collegiate level, but it's starting to show the level of what a young athlete is or the value they can possibly bring? So when it's coming down to it, do you think in order ways to build up the student athlete and build up as a quote-unquote coalition that, you know, group economics can eventually form down? And
I think that tie, that harkens back to education, yeah. Understanding economic value, yeah. Economic power, and the value of doing things together. But I think that comes back to education, right? It comes back to awareness, understanding the value in the marketplace, and then being able to see where you can actually have impact, grow, coming together, strengthens you as a group, strengthens the individuals. Yeah, I think everything's on the table to be considered in terms of creating a model that serves the student athlete well in those areas that I talked about, educationally and economically, and in their experience. I think that's an important part of it too, because our experiences are part of what shape us going forward. And having a educationally grounded, economically beneficial experience through college for those who want to go. You don't have to go to college. That is not, nobody said, you don't have, if you don't want to go to college and adhere to the parameters of what college That's means, real. You don't have to go.
That's real.
You don't. Mm-hmm. So if you want to cast your bread on the water because you don't want to go to school and you want to try to be a pro, there are avenues to do that. Now, you may very well fall without a parachute, but that's okay too.
Right. They were like, Steve Jobs did it. Bill Gates did it.
Every rule, but they are few and far between.
Yes, sir.
We know that there's a guaranteed pathway when you seriously approach education and the people that can leverage for your good that are able to help you. We know that is more of a proven and tried way to move forward than looking for a lottery ticket. We know that. And athletics can sometimes provide. I don't know if I go to college apart from my basketball ability based on the economic situation my family was in. I don't know. Perhaps being the oldest of five, my parents may have made sacrifices. I don't know. But I do know that basketball ability got me to The Ohio State University. I did my part to get my degree in marketing from there and to leverage relationships and that network to build the life that's been rich and full, not perfect, but I know how much that experience and the education that I got there and continue to get through the people I've met there has helped enhance my life, not just for me, for my wife and our children, and most likely for my grandchildren too. Mm-hmm. The fact that I was able to use basketball to get an education and to build the life with some financial stability and resources and knowledge that I can pass down to my kids that they can pass down to theirs. And I know education is a core component of that. And athletics, basketball specifically, gave me that chance.
Well, before you get out of here, we got to talk about the tournament. The Final Four is officially set.
Yeah.
Obviously, right now, the big man is back. You
yes.
got the big men like Zach
big
Edey,
time.
Who's putting on for Big Ten. DJ Burns yep. holding it down. And then Clean Kong from UConn, you know. And then obviously you have, Alabama as well. What do you think about these matchups? What can we expect from it? And, obviously, what's it going to take for UConn to return as a – you know, the first back-to-back champion since 07.
Yeah, you know, UConn to me is the favorite. Mm. They've got everything. They've got the fewest weaknesses of any of the four teams remaining. I mean, they just do everything a championship needs to do well. They rebound, they defend, they take care of the ball, they share it. They've got depth. They've got all the components. They've got the fewest weaknesses of any team left. I think they cut down the nets. I'd love to see Purdue as a former Big Ten guy who's a fan of Matt Painter's. And the stories are rich in each particular situation. Alabama firing up threes and here recently in the tournament finding enough defense to be able to move on, because that was always the question going into the tournament. Will they defend? We know they can score. Yeah. But they've done a phenomenal job in stretches defending at a high level to where their high-octane offense can get them over the hump. NC State is a marvelous story. It's just an amazing story. Kevin Keats, they lose four in a row. Then they go five in 5 days in the ACC tournament. Mm. And then they win four in the NCAA tournament. Just a magical, marvelous, totally unexpected run. Part of what makes March the madness that we've come to know and love. But I do believe that Purdue and UConn are the two best teams of the four remaining. I think that they will play for it all on Monday night in Phoenix. And I'm eager to see the matchup. I'd love to see that matchup. I love Kling Kong as a nickname. I hadn't heard that, E.C. I hadn't heard or read that. That's pretty strong. But I'd love to see those guys. And Edie, I've watched his journey as a freshman. Yeah. And his improvement has been remarkable, and his competitive spirit is great. So, yeah, I think those are the teams that will be playing for it all. And I would give the slight edge to UConn. I really would. DJ Burns is one of the great stories in the tournament, doing what he does with his body. And I know he's not in great condition because he can't play extended minutes. But, man, is he fun to watch, because he has fun playing the game, and he shows that. And it's great to see. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. The tournament always delivers. It's been great, and we'll have a worthy champion when we get done on Monday night.
Well, Clark, we really appreciate you, man. This has been one of our favorite conversations of, like, you know, we speak into, you know, what we stand for in terms of empowering the athlete, but at the same time, it's like, how are we helping building ourselves up? You know, that's on and off the court, and, you know, the model, I mean, you spoke to it many different times. It's like, this is the model of success. You know, you put the work in, you have a passion for something, and, you know, you just dedicate yourself to gaining the knowledge and just putting in the work. And so we truly, truly appreciate, you know, your guidance, you know, your words, and you showing us that path. You know, we like to adopt you in the point forward family. I don't know how many assists you averaged, but, you know, you definitely.
I had a few, Andre.
But just thank you for pulling up and giving us some of your time. And we look forward to hearing from you next week and crowning a champion.
All right, Clark. Love, bro.
Great to be.
Take care.
All right. Much love. All right, E.T. Take care, man. See you guys.
Point Forward.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Point Forward. Your support means everything. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And stay updated by following us on all social media @PointForward. We'll see you guys next week. Mm-hmm.